BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
This is the Football Daily with Steve Crossman.
11 goals in the two matches featuring British clubs. Arsenal scored four. We'll be at the Emirates shortly for more on their win over PSV Eindhoven. Manchester United conceded four in defeat in Munich at the Allianz Arena. Former England defender Stephen Warnock correspondent John Murray are there. Somehow, John, a seven-goal thriller.
Yes, anyone who just hears the score will perhaps think that this must have been a real thriller. In truth, for long periods, it didn't look likely to be anything other than a Bayern win. Not for most of the first half hour, mind, when United actually showed well. But the turning point was a real howler of a goalkeeping error by United's Andre Onana, who couldn't keep out a shot from Leroy Sané as he dived down to his left. It was a bad mistake. It clearly rattled him. It rattled the team. They conceded again within 4 minutes when Serge Gnabry finished well, set up by Musiala. And 2-0 at half-time, Manchester United needed something. They got it. Rasmus Højlund scored his first goal for the club with a shot that deflected in off Kim. But very soon, another big turning point when a VAR decision against Christian Eriksen, a handball, and upstepped Harry Kane on his Champions League debut for Bayern Munich to score from the penalty spot. That 3-1. And at that stage, Bayern Munich were dominating it. They looked almost certain to get another goal to put them out of sight. But Casemiro then scored an unlovely goal and hooked it into the back of the net. Bayern substitutes then came into play. Thomas Müller and Matthijs Tel, who rattled a shot into the roof of the net to make it 4-2, only for Casemiro to get a little header on a Bruno Fernandes free kick right towards the end of added time, which gave us the final score of 4-3.
Stephen, I'm really glad I get to ask this question rather than having to answer it. How do you begin to sum that up?
Well, I think what you're seeing with Manchester United at the moment is a very fractious team. It's one that's got a lot of issues, confidence-wise, also leadership-wise on the pitch. I mean, at times, how they let themselves be overrun in midfield and counter-attacked on time and time again. There was no balance to the team or a lack of balance. And I understand you're chasing it a little bit, but you do it within a shape and within a foundation. There's a lot that needs doing to this Manchester United team, and there's a lot of work on the hands for Erik ten Hag. He's going to be tested to his absolute maximum now as a manager, not only on the pitch, but off the pitch as well.
Was there anything that happened in that match which suggests to you we should be asking questions about Erik ten Hag's approach, or was it just moments beyond his control?
No, there's always moments beyond your control, but you have to make sure that they're very few and far between, and that when you do have those moments, that you don't get punished and you have people on the pitch who can sense those moments and help you get through them. But the changes were okay from Erik ten Hag. When you think of what the impact of Martial had and Garnacho down the left-hand side, they were positive changes. But then the shape of the team's wrong in midfield and in the foot, almost the ability to release players then to go and find a way back into the game. It has to come from a foundation. That comes from the management. That comes from the manager saying, you've got to hold these positions. At one point, I look on the pitch and you've got Casemiro. Okay, he scores two goals, but they're not in goal-scoring positions. They're not centre-forward positions. He's playing centre-forward. And I'm thinking, you're leaving Musiala free in a position where he's just enjoying it. He's just relishing that opportunity. Every time that Casemiro steps out of his position to do that. What I will say about Casemiro is that he's coming under a lot of criticism. He's not being helped. He's not being helped at all by either Christian Eriksen or Bruno Fernandes alongside him. And that is very difficult for him to manage that position solely on his own. But you think with the experience he's got, he would be able to manage that and manage the players around him to make sure that he doesn't get overrun, that he does get them in tighter to next to him to make life easier for himself.
So, John, good at times, bad at times, a bit of a mess at times. Manchester United in microcosm.
Yeah, I think, as we've heard from Erik ten Hag after recent matches, some of the recent defeats, he has talked about the performance being not all bad. And that was the case, as I say, in the first 25 minutes this evening. But there were times, as Stephen says, in the second half where Bayern were just running through. Remember, you know, they struck the frame of the goal at least a couple of occasions in the second half. And it did seem as though, you know, they at one stage, it looked as though they were coasting to victory. You know, it's disjointed. it's not right. Mm. That's what it is at the moment, Manchester United.
Onana's error is the thing that you just can't legislate for. He must have stayed down, John, for about 15 seconds after that.
Yeah, it really did seem to affect him. You know, he lay down on the turf. I mean, it was an odd goal. It was an odd mistake. Mm. Shot from the edge of the area, set up by Kane. But it certainly wasn't the fiercest of shots, but it dipped. It was bending away from him. But he went down, and it was almost he couldn't extend his arms to make the save. And it struck him somewhere on the arms or the upper body and just slipped through into the net. And it did affect him. You could tell body language. We were watching him, and it felt like he was also still feeling it when he came out at the start of the second half, but did make a string of saves in the second period as well to keep the score down.
That's a really good point, John, because when the error happened, Stephen, I immediately just thought of, you know, the classic goalkeeper errors that Manchester United have had over the years, like sort of a Massimo Taibbi through the legs moment. But it wasn't that. It wasn't him not concentrating. He just didn't seem to be able to move his body correctly.
I think it is a lack of concentration as well, Steve. I think you do have to put it down to that, because every mistake is a lack of concentration to some level. But yeah, he doesn't cover himself in any glory. It's almost like his footwork's poor as well when he goes into it. I'm not a goalkeeper, but when I watch it, it's very static from him. And then the way he goes down, I said at half-time, he almost anticipates a stronger shot. Well, that's not your job to anticipate that. There is a certain element of that. But when you watch the incident back again, he could actually control it. The shot's that slow, he could actually put his foot on it and control it. It's a terrible, terrible error from him. And he knows that. There's no one in the ground who is more accepting of the error than Onana, and understanding that it should never have happened.
One positive. A first goal for Rasmus Højlund, John.
Yeah. Took a little deflection. I think he needed that. Yeah. You know, that could play for Manchester United, the fact that he's off the mark now. But I don't know. We saw a glimpse. I mean, Rashford was involved as well in that, so we saw a glimpse there. But they're not getting enough from those two together yet. And Rashford is not in his best form at the moment. There's no question about that.
It was one of those where the Højlund goal, Stephen, he's not caught it right at all. If it wasn't for the deflection, let's be honest, it's not going in. And I know, obviously, you weren't a striker, but I think many strikers would say to us, sometimes you just need something like that.
Oh, no, they're the ones that strikers like, where it is a little bit scruffy, because a lot of people might not take that situation on. They might go, oh, it's not quite sat right for me, or it's not quite where I want it to be. Well, they're the ones where you actually catch people off guard a little bit. So he won't care about that. He won't care whether it's a sweet strike or a horrible strike. As long as that ends up in the back of the net, he will be delighted to get off the mark. I agree with John. I don't think his performance was great at times, but what's he feeding off? What's the supply line into him? It wasn't great. He's feeding on scraps, and when he gets an opportunity, he's put it away.
But listen, this is obviously, on paper, the most difficult match in the group. They've got Copenhagen and Galatasaray, the other teams in the group, you know, who'll obviously pose problems in their own way. But they had a draw tonight, you know, and you want the other matches in the group to be a draw if you start off with a defeat. And I would say now, clearly, the pressure's on Erik ten Hag and Manchester United after a result like this, the way that the goals were conceded. But they have a run of matches now where they have an opportunity, if they're able to show their best, show something better. Burnley away on Saturday night, a couple of games against Crystal Palace, one in the League Cup, and then the home match against Galatasaray. There's an opportunity there. You know, it's a test of character. And Manchester United, what do they do? What have they done over the years? That's why you sign big players. That's why they go to Manchester United, because you feel that they have characters that are big enough to play for Manchester United. Now they've got to prove it.
OK, let's hear the thoughts of the Manchester United manager. Here's Erik ten Hag.
When you score 3 goals in Munich, at least you have to take a point. But we didn't, and therefore we have to look in the mirror. But the goals were easy giveaways. We were in the first 25 minutes, I think, we were better than it came as Munich. And then that goal that was such easy, but it was not only André. If you see how easy Sané is coming through, and that has to do with determination. And you don't let play so easy through. And that's the point we have to cross the line as individual and as a team to win games. Because it started there, on a very high level. It was against Arsenal, Bayern Munich, I think, Brighton, all top level teams. And we going head to head, but they win. Then the way they win, we have to make our own look. And that has to do, you know, with determination. And then you make your own look. And otherwise, you don't get it, because no one will bring you anything in football.
Look, it's an incredibly difficult away game. It's Bayern Munich away. How good were Bayern, John? How good did they need to be?
As we've heard since we've been out here in Germany, you know, the people who watch Bayern regularly don't think that they are really clicking just yet. There are lots of questions about them. But, you know, is that team capable of winning the Champions League this season? I would say yes.
Stephen?
On that performance, no, I'd say, because of the opposition who are playing against, who are poor. But will they get better? Yes.
They're Bayern
Munich.
Will.
Yeah, but they will improve, John. They'll better
improve.
And better.
Yeah.
And even Musiala, who we saw for 70 minutes here, it took him 20, 30 minutes to get in the game. But when you watch him play, wow, he's a talent. He is special. And then you've got the ability to grab Gnabry, then Coleman, Leroy Sané. You look at that firepower and you think, wow, and you've added Harry Kane into that. It's quite frightening. The issue I have is the midfield area, as in there was too many chances afforded to Manchester United. And that's where, again, I talk about the balance of getting it right from defence into attack. And that's where you could see them perhaps falling short. However, it is a work in progress. They will get better. But go back to who they were trying to sign in the summer. Who were they wanting to get in? João Paulinho. They wanted that enforcer in that midfield. Now, if they were to sign him in January, these can win the Champions League. Yep. They definitely can win the Champions League. But they've got a squad very, very capable, Steve.
Yeah, I think if Inter can get to the Champions League last season, mm-hmm. I think Bayern Munich, Thomas Tuchel as manager, not on the touchline tonight, you know, they are capable of getting there to Wembley at the end of this season.
Harry Kane's just been speaking to TV. He said a crazy finish to the game, but most of the game we dominated. We went up, then lost a bit of concentration. Overall, a good start to the campaign against a tough opponent. It's been nice. It's great to score. There's always room for improvement. We've started the season well. We can get better in areas. We're working towards that. We'll enjoy tonight. It's a quick turnaround ahead of the weekend. It was funny, John, because I think you remarked upon it actually early on. It was quite a long time before you actually said Harry Kane's name.
Yeah, wasn't involved in the game. Neither was Musiala in the opening stages. And that's because of the way that Manchester United started the match as well. But there were lots of familiar touches from Kane. I felt as the game went on, you know, he was involved a great deal outside of the penalty area, as we know that he has been with Tottenham and still is with England. And from the penalty spot, you know, despite what happened in Qatar, there aren't many better from the penalty spot.
Back to Oktoberfest for you two now?
It's closed for the night now. That's it. Finishes at 10:30.
You kept us too long.
Oh, I'm so sorry. And I have been to Oktoberfest, and the thing that I remember most is there were lots of kiosks selling fish and chips. So does that mean I was in the wrong bit of Oktoberfest?
No. Food outlets all over the place. Although they do say that there is one hall that stays open late.
Oh, that feels like my cue to let you go and find
we've been
it.
Told. Yes.
We'll find out. Thank you very much, John Murray, our correspondent, Stephen Warnock, inside the Allianz Arena, one of the great stadiums in European football, to watch Manchester United lose 4-3 at Bayern Munich. Coming up on the Football Daily, we'll react to the rest of the Champions League action and the EFL.
Hi, Yaya Touré here for a brand new podcast from the BBC World Service, Match of the Day, Africa Top 10. Join me and fellow footballers, Gabriel Zakuani.
Hello.
And Ifan Okuku.
Hi.
As we choose our top 10 from the best of Africa football.
We're not here to play football, but to argue about all things African football.
That's Match of the Day, Africa Top 10. Find it wherever you get your BBC podcast.
The Football Daily Podcast with Steve Crossman.
much more straightforward night at the Emirates for Arsenal, back in the Champions League after 6 years away and 4-0 winners over PSV Eindhoven, Ali Bruceball.
Yes, I think when Mikel Arteta tucked himself up in bed in his Arsenal pyjamas last night, he must have closed his eyes and hoped the club's return to the Champions League would go something like this. I reckon his team at the most incisive we've seen them this season. They really clicked, helped by the fact that a confident PSV team doing really well domestically decided to have a go themselves, which then gave Arsenal's creative players the space they crave. And goodness me, how they exploited that. 2-0 up in 20 minutes. Bukayo Saka got the first, then teed Leandro Trossard up for the second. Gabriel Jesus rifled in the third before half-time. He looked razor-sharp up front for Arsenal. And Martin Ødegaard completed the scoring with 20 minutes to play. And those last three finishes all superbly struck shots with unerring accuracy. At the other end of the field, David Raya got the nodding goal. What he did have to do, which wasn't much, he did confidently and comfortably, and not only a Champions League win on their return to the competition, but a very nice warm-up for the game against their biggest rivals, Tottenham, who come here on Sunday.
We've got the former Villa and Leicester boss, Dean Smith, who's been alongside Ali at the Emirates. Dean, I didn't realise managers wore pyjamas relating to their club. That's a new one.
Well, yeah, not for me, but maybe others.
Yeah, I'm speculating, Steve.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Just on David Raya, before we talk about the rest of it, Dean. Obviously, he's come into the team, came into the team for the Everton game. He's still in the team for this one. And he's not had loads to do. But what I'm wondering is, as a manager, when you sit there watching them, is there anything about the way that he's fitted in which might explain the decision? Do they look different in any way, even when he's not having to be very busy?
It's really difficult because, you know, Arsenal were outstanding last season as well. They've started this season well. You know, when called upon, you know, I think Aaron Ramsdale was in the PFA team of the year last season. So that shows how well he did. I think the interesting thing for everybody is what they do on Sunday, you know, against Tottenham now. You know, we've had a 4-0 win against PSV today. You know, what will happen on Sunday? Will Aaron get the nod or does David keep the shirt?
That was obviously, Ali, the big talking point before the game, which of those two was going to start tonight. But come the end of the game, the return of Gabriel Jesus has got to be up there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we were talking about him before the game and just how highly Mikel Arteta and his teammates rate him in terms of, you know, not just, I mean, I think sometimes he gets criticised, doesn't he, for not taking all his chances, but it's not just about that with Gabriel Jesus. It's what he enables all the other players to do. I'll tell you what I actually found, Steve, really instructive tonight sitting alongside Dean, who obviously, having been down there on the touchline countless times, you know, reads the game so brilliantly. Dean, you were noticing in that first half, so I mentioned it there and you actually told me this. PSV have come as a confident team and they decided to have a go at Arsenal. Arsenal were very clever, weren't they? Because Jordi Schouten in that PSV midfield was given the brief to follow Kai Havertz, and Kai Havertz basically led him a merry dance.
He did, yeah. He took him into the back line and they ended up becoming a back five and they had a front five trying to press Arsenal. David Raya's in there for a reason, because he becomes an outfield player and one of their spare men then become the midfield, and they're excellent at finding the spare men, and they built up really well by doing that.
And Steve, it's so interesting to watch that when that's explained to you and then you follow it happening, you just think, blimey, look at all that space, and that's how it happens. And you know, you've got to tip your cap to Mikel Arteta, haven't you, there?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they would have talked about that. They would have seen that they're a man-orientated team and they will follow you into areas. So take them in and create the space, and that's what they did really well. And I was really impressed with them. And as you say, PSV are a good team, but there's levels, and Arsenal showed their level today. You know, they're signing Rice for 100 million and Havertz for 65 million. And I think, you know, the PSV signings are 15 million euros. So there is a big difference, but you've still got to go and do it on the pitch. And I thought they were excellent tonight.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And it is worth reflecting, Ali, that for two reasons. One, they're a great side. And the other being, you know, the kind of players they can bring in versus most of the rest of the continent. That's a great result for Arsenal and obviously a great performance. By virtue of being a top Premier League team, they're one of the favourites for the Champions League. They have to be.
Yeah, that's right, Steve. And you know, Dean makes the point that in the end, it does all come down to resources and money. And I watch Manchester City, in the end, you know, comfortably dismiss Red Star despite going behind last night because Red Star just can't match them for quality of player. But, you know, Manchester United have lost tonight. And yes, I know it was away at Bayern Munich. Goodness me, I mean, they've spent some money. So it's about spending it well. And then when you've got the players, as Dean says, getting them into the system, you know, David Raya slotting in, Kai Havertz starting to settle in a little bit more. And just the perfect start. They couldn't have wished for a better start, really, Arsenal, in this group. So Sevilla and Lens already in the group as well. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put them up there with Manchester City, Steve. And I wouldn't necessarily put them up there with Bayern Munich. It's so early in the season and at this stage of the competition, and Arsenal haven't been at this level for such a long time. But they do have the players and they can play the football, and teams won't want to face them, Dean.
No, they won't. They look the level. You know, they pushed Man City all the way last season. They fell away a little bit at the end, but, you know, Man City were just winning games for fun. So it's really tough to be at that level all the time. But they've made some really astute signings again, which only strengthens them. You know, Jorginho comes on and we'd forgot he was actually here. Yeah. You know, and they've got a really good squad now that's going to be, you know, a problem to anybody who plays them in this at this level.
Yeah, on that, actually, just some quotes coming through to us. Mikel Arteta speaking to TV about squad depth. He said, "I've got good headaches. It's probably the hardest thing in the job because you get emotionally attached to them. It's been a beautiful journey with them." That I find fascinating, and you will know that as a manager. I'm sure you can become emotionally attached, but to really succeed, he is going to have to detach himself to an extent, isn't he?
Well, you have to make tough decisions. That's the be-all and end-all, because your job is to win football games, and you know you may really like somebody, but somebody else is better, and you've got to pick the team that you believe is going to win football games, and you have to take that emotion out of it. And he's certainly doing a good job of that at the moment by watching his team at the moment, and you know, long may that continue.
Do you know, Ali, it says everything about Bukayo Saka that just reading Bukayo Saka's first Champions League game sounds wrong.
I know.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, do you know what? I mean, funny enough, Steve, if you think about it, it's obvious. He's been here, you know, all his career, and Arsenal haven't been in the Champions League that time. But because I think we've watched him play in the biggest games in the Premier League, but also for England, and play so well and sort of step onto every stage and do so well, you almost sort of double check yourself on that one. And you know, we were talking about it before the game about Martin Ødegaard. A couple of games in the Champions League for Real Madrid, such a different player now. And these players, you know, that's what they... I mean, they were obviously trying to win the title last season. They didn't manage to do that. But the next best thing was obviously getting to this competition, and now they want to stay in this competition for as long as they can this season, but make sure they're in it season after season, bring better players into the club, and really try and go and push Manchester City once again, try and challenge for that title.
A bit more from Arteta here. No mention of merry dances or Arsenal pyjamas, unfortunately, but he said, "I will enjoy tonight. I will go home. I'll have a nice late dinner with my wife. We'll enjoy the victory. I'll focus on Spurs because we have a big game coming up." And that will be live on 5 Live on Premier League Sunday this weekend. Arsenal versus Tottenham in the North London Derby. Dean, Ali, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Dean Smith and Ali Bruce Ball, who've been with us this evening. John Bennett's just walked into the studio and looks at me like an absolute maniac. Right, let's talk about the rest of the Champions League. Key results.
Yes, let's start with Real Madrid against Union Berlin. And Jude Bellingham has done it again on his Champions League debut for Real Madrid. The hero yet again, 6 goals in 6 Real Madrid appearances. Third time he scored a winner for them. Only failed to score in one of his Real Madrid games so far. 5 Man of the Match awards. And this was a winner, Steve, in the 94th minute. And it was a poacher's finish, right place, right time. Valverde's deflected shot, he was 1 yard out, had the instinct to turn and knock it in. He can do no wrong right now. He's tweeted, "First experience of that Champions League magic at the Bernabeu. Unbelievable."
It's funny because when Carlo Ancelotti said, "Oh, he's replacing Karim Benzema," everybody laughed, but they're not laughing now.
No, and he's playing in this number 10 position just behind the front two, and he's creating chances. I think it's 1 assist so far, and he's getting on the end of some crosses. Brilliant performances, but we must mention Union Berlin.
Yeah.
Their Champions League debut, so close to a precious point. They were a fourth tier team as recently as 2008, only promoted to the top tier in 2019. Real community club, 60,000 members. They nearly got that point. Leonardo Bonucci at the back was superb. He was actually off the pitch. He'd been subbed when Bellingham scored that winner. In Real Madrid's group, finished Braga 1, Napoli 2. But the Italians slightly fortunate here. Braga got a late equaliser and then Napoli scored a winner with an own goal late on. And Braga actually hit the post late on as well. But I think Napoli and Real Madrid will run away with that group.
There was also a very late goal in the Inter Milan game against Real Sociedad. No late goals from goalkeepers tonight, which is a shame, but we got some drama.
Yeah, that is disappointing. Real Sociedad back in the Champions League after 10 years away, and they were really close to a famous win. An 86th minute equaliser for Lautaro Martinez, sliding in an equaliser for Inter. So it finished Real Sociedad 1, Inter 1. Bryce Mendes scored the opener for Real Sociedad, capitalising on a mistake from Bastoni. They did get back into it second half Inter. They actually had Barella sent off, but that decision was reversed by the referee, Michael Oliver. Then Inter had a goal disallowed before the late equaliser. And in that same group, a shock result, Benfica 0, FC Salzburg 2. Benfica were down to 10 men, but that's a brilliant result for Salzburg, who are unbeaten now in the last 22 games.
John, thank you very much indeed. That's our reporter, John Bennett. He will be off to find his Leicester City pyjamas after victory over Norwich in the Championship tonight, Aaron Paul.
Yeah, they're very impressive, Steve, against Norwich side that are really taking to David Wagner's style. Quick on the break, even when they make five changes to the 11, Enzo Maresca has really implemented a nice passing style, calm, collected on the ball, but ferocious when needing to recover possession. But for hitting the crossbar, Norwich never really looked clinical enough to breach Mads Hermansson's goals. The two goals themselves for Leicester came through Ian Acho and Casey McAteer. And on McAteer, he was someone who finished the season 90th out of the 92 EFL and Premier League teams with AFC Wimbledon. He's a real player, very smart on the ball. Watch out for him on the right. Leicester, 8 wins from 9 now. Norwich's unbeaten start at home is over.
There's some really nice stories tonight and contrasts as well, Aaron. You know, you've got Enzo Maresca, who's a manager who's, of course, you know, fledgling start to his career. Neil Warnock not retiring this time, but it was his final game in charge of Huddersfield tonight.
Yeah, Steve, one thing I've got to say, just sort of scatting around on social media, on his final appearance at Huddersfield, it's so impressive how Neil Warnock gets indoors after torrential downpours across the country and spruces himself up in a really well-cut suit for the interviews in inside 15 minutes, really. In all seriousness, though, he said himself he wanted to put the pride back in to a club that was struggling and really just swaying. Drifting Huddersfield Town. Was the point worth it for either side this evening? I'd say it's a shade better result for Huddersfield than Stoke, who managed to get back in the goals after three league games without one. I think I speak for all Huddersfield fans when I say, though, that I really hope the owner and the CEO's decision is vindicated as the season goes on. Neil Warnock, see you in February.
Yeah, Huddersfield 2, Stoke 2. Speaking of managers and press conferences, for anybody who might have forgotten, when Tony Mowbray left Blackburn Rovers, he gave an extraordinary press conference, sitting there with a cup of tea, talking about all the ways in which he'd been wronged. Well, he's gone back there with Sunderland and won 3-1. He will be loving that.
I interviewed him once when he was having a minestrone soup. It was AFC Bournemouth when I watched him as Blackburn manager. I know we've got to be down the middle here, and we've got to be at level in regards to our views, but I love him. I really love him so much. There's just something so wholesome about Tony Mowbray. He's very much having a party, isn't he? 4 wins from 5, and his side works so hard for him. The energy's there. So is the commitment. He's got the right pegs and the right holes. I look at the back. Luke O'Neill has been a revelation at centre-half. Dan Ballard proving week on week why Sunderland fought tooth and nail for his signature. But the front five just plays like a floating independent unit. You know, he's just look at Joe Bellingham. His brother's doing it in the Champions League. He is a phenomenal player in this Sunderland side. You've got Alex Pritchard. Jack Clark seems to have found a home. They've recruited young and they look so, so refreshing.
Tell us what's on 72 plus this week then, Aaron.
Oh, the whole manager, Liam Rossini, after this evening's 0-0 draw with Leeds. Really impressive start to the season. He's going to be joining Joby Mackenough and myself. Plus, you know, just the chat about the rest of the EFL. Loads going on. Cheltenham have a part of company with Wade Elliott. I'm sure we'll be talking about their poor start to the season. No goals at all. Absolute manners. But 72 plus, the home of the EFL from 5 Live, out on Friday.
Thanks to Aaron and all of the guests on the Football Daily. That's it for this episode. I'll be back with you on Thursday with Guillaume Balaguer, James Horncastle and Raphael Honigstein for the EuroLeagues. As always, thank you so much for listening.
Hear them do their thing in the Premier League. Then hear what they have to say on BBC Sounds.
Subscribe to the Players Channel and get inside the footballing minds of Premier League icons. From the Footballers Football Podcast.
I'm getting stick for arguing with one of their players, and that's a player that they was booing themselves not too long ago. So.
To Football First with Troy Deeney and Jermaine Defoe.
I just laughed. I went, don't worry, you'll play me next week.
And much more to come as we head into the new season.
Real football talk straight from the players.
The Players Channel. Listen on BBC Sounds.